exciting incidents tap into the crucial turning points in the lives of few, in hope that many will come to see unexpected turns as necessary ingredients for deeper peace and enormous growth. Have you experienced an inciting incident? Something that has upset the balance of your life? A situation or circumstance that has provided a fork in the road where you had to make a decision to go one direction, rely on God, or suffer consequences that ultimately led into a new direction? Have you seen this fork in the road as an opportunity for change or great good, choosing to grow through it and to lean more heavily in God and trusting in Him? Listening friend, if you've been tuned in for the last few days, you know what I'm talking about, as we've been hearing stories, little vignettes, hosted by Chris Fabry on a new book by Moody Publishing called Inciting Incidents, 6 Stories of Fighting Disappointments in a Flawed World. We've heard stories from David, Tracy, Blaine, and Jeff, and this 55-minute Moody special, what they've labeled as Theater of the Mind, I've broken into 3 morning programs, with today being part 3 in the final installment of this radio drama. You can purchase copies of this book, Inciting Incidents, by going to incitingincidents.org or moodyradio.org. I've thoroughly enjoyed reading my edition and following along with this broadcast. At the end of today's program, there will be a call-in for a copy of Inciting Incidents during the morning program and also when the announcement is made during the re-airing in the evening. So we'll pick up where we left off yesterday as the Inciting Incidents host Chris Fabry will take us through a few more stories and examples. Oh, and by the way, it's October 3rd, 2012, and you're listening to the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends. Here's Chris Fabry.
The tumor had been growing in David's brain for a decade. The affair Tracy's father had been engaged in had been going on for years, undetected. The abuse Blaine received had happened a decade earlier as well. All inciting incidents that force those going through these experiences to choose, to change. As they said at the beginning, an inciting incident is something in a character's life that upsets the balance, that provides a fork in the road, an opportunity that you wouldn't wish for, but that can be used for great good in your life. You can read more about the stories you're hearing today in the book, Inciting Incidents. Find out more at moodyradio.org. There you'll read about David, Blaine, Tracy, and Jeff Goines.
Pain is always part of how we grow, and certainly there is inexplicable pain in our lives, things that happen, ways in which we suffer that we don't really understand, and I'm not interested in explaining those things away. When I look back at the moments in my life where I've grown the most, I've been the least comfortable. And I think there's 2 types of pain. There's the type of pain that's more like suffering, where there's not really an explanation for it, and there's some sort of evil or malignant force behind it. And so that's one type of pain. Another type of pain is, you know, kind of the pain that you feel when you're working out, when your muscles are growing. And I think more often than not, when I'm growing, that's the type of pain that I'm feeling. It's the, do I have to type pain? Do I have to do this? I know it's good for me, but I really don't want to. And I know that when I'm done, I'll be glad that I did it. But there's this initial resistance that I feel before I actually do it.
If it sounds academic, it's not. What Jeff experienced on a bridge in Spain was not academic, but a snapshot in time he will never forget.
I remember the moment when my life literally changed in an evening, where how I looked at the world dramatically shifted from focusing primarily on me and my own interests and needs and wants to being more concerned with the needy. And it happened one night while I was crossing a bridge in Spain, where I was studying abroad during college. And earlier that evening, my friends and I had met this beggar man who came up to us and asked us for money. And he stood on this street corner and was screaming at us. He started asking us for money, and as we first ignored him, then told him we'd come back later, and eventually just kept walking on. He started screaming at us, "For the love of Jesus Christ, help me." We'd never experienced that before. I grew up in the Midwest and grew up in rural Illinois and just wasn't really acquainted with urban poverty. And so this took me aback, and I did what most people do when they're uncomfortable. I ignored it. I walked away. And as I was crossing the bridge, I remembered this phrase that this man kept saying. He kept saying, "For the love of Jesus Christ, please help me." And I don't know if he was just trying to tug on our heartstrings or what, but that phrase just kept reverberating in my mind. And I got about halfway across the bridge, and I just felt sick to my stomach. And so I gave my backpack to my roommate, and I said, "Go on ahead without me. I'll be late for supper, but I'll be by later this evening. I just got to take care of something." And he saw in my eyes that I needed to do something, and I think he probably knew what it was. And so I just turned around, and I started running. And I ran back to try to find the man, and he had disappeared from where we saw him. And so I searched and searched, and finally I found him crouched out over in an alley smoking a cigarette, and I asked him if he wanted to have some dinner with me. His name was Micah, which I found out later. We went over to the nearby McDonald's, and he ordered a Big Mac and fries and a beer, and he looked at me and said, I'm sorry, that's just what I'd really like." And so I said, "Okay." And so we sat down and shared this meal together, and then he said something that really surprised me and even shocked me. With a mouthful of French fries, he said, "You are the only one." And I didn't know what he meant. I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You are the only one who has stopped. I've been sitting here on this corner every night for months." And it turns out he was a German immigrant who couldn't get back into his country because he had lost his papers. And he said, "I've been pleading with people to stop and help me, or, you know, give me money for a meal or something, and nobody has stopped. You're the only one." And that just changed something in me. It really wrecked me. I think when we pass somebody on the street, you know, or drive past somebody whose car is broken down, or a homeless person asking for money, or somebody who's in need, and we have the power to meet that need, we tell ourselves this nice, polite lie, which is that somebody else who's better than me, who's, you know, more moral or a better Christian than me, is going to stop and help that person. Surely somebody will do it, just not me. And what I learned that night is sometimes there are some people that we come across, some situations that we encounter, where there is nobody else, where we are the person that is intended to help that person. And I had to turn around.
Jeff returned to the States, returned to normal life. But Micah, the man on the bridge, stuck with him. And in Nashville, of all places, he met another man who opened his eyes to the truth.
My impression of homeless people was they didn't have a home, and I found out that wasn't true. And he showed me this area where he and a group of his friends lived, literally underneath the city in this man-made cave that was carved out of this wall of concrete. And a friend and I visited them and just got to know them and hear their stories, and we started visiting them regularly about once a week, and we even got to celebrate Christmas with them. And at one point I was visiting them, and I was down below the city, and for some reason I glanced up at the surface, because we were underneath the street, and I could see people walking by on the street, but they couldn't see me. And I realized just a few weeks before, I was like those people. I was walking up above, unaware of the world beneath me. And it took a homeless guy named Steve to help me have the eyes to see another world. And I realized that what Mother Teresa said was true. Calcutta, areas of great need and opportunity for us to serve, literally are everywhere. We just need help seeing them. This, for me, is still a daily struggle. For a while, I thought that I needed to replicate these experiences. And so after Spain, I tried to do things like I had done there, and I found myself disappointed and even growing disillusioned. And the same thing happened in Nashville after I met Steve. I tried to recreate these experiences because, frankly, they gave me a bit of a thrill. It felt good to do good. And what I experienced was sort of this law of diminishing returns. And it took a while, but I began to realize that the thing that made me come alive, that made me feel alive in those experiences, and the thing that God was really asking of me was obedience, not to do something in a certain formulaic way, but rather to be open to being moved to a point that I would be willing to do something that is personally uncomfortable for me, but is good for somebody else and really fulfills what I think Christ calls us to do and be. God isn't calling us to do a certain type of ministry necessarily for the rest of our lives, but he's calling us to be obedient and open to his voice. And for me, that looks like doing hard things, doing things that are initially uncomfortable for me. And because of these experiences, I think I can recognize moments when I'm being called to do something better than I could, do on my own. And it initially feels like what it felt like on that bridge, or when Steve asked us to come see his home. There's this initial response where I'm scared and hesitant, and I understand that that's an ungodly fear. It's not wisdom or discretion. It's fear, and I have an opportunity to make myself a little bit uncomfortable in the short term and be a part of God's bigger story in the longer term.
In any story, especially as a storyteller, you know that what makes a great story is really strong results. So whenever you have that moment where everything changes, you want to say, everything was great, then this bad thing happened, and then it all got better, and now things are better than what they used to be. That's the results that we want in any story that we tell, that we like to watch on a movie or we like to watch on TV. But this story isn't like that. I'm still in the middle ground. I'm still in the wilderness. I can't say the results to this story are I overcame cancer, or it was a miracle and it's completely gone. I can't say any of that because I'm still in the middle of it.
We all think that we have to be healed in order to provide healing for somebody else. And we have to have it all together, and we have to have our ducks in a row, and we have to have the answers in order to provide anyone with any sort of advice or healing or encouragement, or even just an honest, I don't know. And I love the concept of the wounded healer, is because I think I'm branded with wounding. And it's not just because of a life event. I think we're all human and we hurt in every season of our life. Like, we just are in the midst of a culture of pain. We're sinful people and we hurt each other, and we're constantly in a state of asking for forgiveness and understanding grace, and that we never know the things that we're learning and the things that we're presently going through, where that will sort of line up in somebody else's journey and provide encouragement and help and wisdom.
What I've been going through is this process of letting go of control, letting go of knowing what's going to happen next, letting go of what I wanted for my life, letting go of my dreams, letting go of my vision for the future, and essentially saying, God, I'm not writing my story. You're writing my story. So I can't control what you want to do with my story. This is up to you. And that process, that resurrection, once again, of moving from my story, dying to self, and living through Christ, that's the process that I feel I'm almost being forced to go through. And maybe I'm being forced because I didn't want to do it myself. Maybe I'm too stubborn to do it myself. But God said, David, there's much more that I have for you, and I need your attention. So we're going to allow this to happen, but through this process, we are going to kind of rebuild you as a person and give you humility, allow you to let go of whatever is holding on to you, that you can learn to follow me and follow me into a new life.
I think that we just need to provide freedom for other people to struggle well and to know that we struggle and just to be real in that. I think there's not a lot of freedom in our culture and our society for people to struggle and for people to be okay with that and to have the freedom to say, I don't know, and this stinks, and I'm not feeling like I have it all together. I don't have it all together. I'm a mess, and that's okay. And to sort of share in each other's messes and to help each other wrestle well is community, and it's life-giving, and it can happen on any stage of our life. Like, I don't have to have the answer to the question before I present the question to somebody else, or even just say, I don't know, but here's what I know about God in the midst of that. And I think that we all, as wounded healers, should just give each other, you know, freedom in order to walk through our journeys well. And we don't have to be in a specific place, and we don't have to have it all together.
The inciting incident has been much more of an invitation, because I feel that every day is an invitation to accept that journey or to run from that journey. And I've made both of those decisions depending on the day, but some days I don't have it in me to keep moving forward and to keep obeying and to keep following. And some days I have that. I have that desire. I have that strength. And that's why I'm in the middle of the story. I can't say these are the results, this is how it ended, because one day feels like victory and one day feels like failure, and I'm just keep going back and forth and back and forth. But that's the story that I feel God is writing for me, and I'm being asked to follow.
I know that there are stories of miracles, and I hear these stories of being, you know, addictions and other things being swept away in a moment. I hear more stories where that hasn't happened. And life is a process, and the Christian walk is truly a journey. It's being renewed in Christ every single day. And I think that we have this idea that if it doesn't happen quickly, or if it doesn't happen in a moment, that it's not happening. But my experience is that it is happening, but it's happened really slowly, really slowly.
That experience of turning around, which happened in college, has really marked what became my career in early adulthood. And so after I graduated from college, I traveled for a while and did some mission work, and then eventually joined a mission organization. And my job for the past 6 years has been helping mobilize young people to have experiences like I had, where they have an opportunity to face poverty or pain or suffering, some sort of need that they have an opportunity to meet. And so instead of turning around, they're in a location in an area where they are forced to depend on God and hear His voice and respond in obedience to whatever He's calling them to do.
Tracy Persico is using the wounds in her past to reach out to others, to be the wounded healer. Jeff Goines still hears the words of the man on the bridge and continues to help others turn around and catch a vision for a hungry world. David Wenzel is still telling stories, still helping others, and his tumor is still there. To end our program, here is another reflection from Blaine Hogan. Blaine says he still deals with panic attacks. He calls it the body's alert, a red flag, the check engine light of the soul. He doesn't try to run from the panic anymore. Instead, as he works at Willow Creek Community Church in a northern suburb of Chicago, he tries to pay attention to those signals. He tries to ask what's going on inside and where God might be leading him, moving him toward himself in unexpected ways. His final thoughts may help you as you think about how you're responding to your inciting incident.
Earlier this winter, I went on a retreat with my very best friend, Jared. On the final day of our trip, I began thinking of how my anxiety, still sometimes very present, is working itself through my story. I started wondering how, after 6 years, my brokenness might still be repaired. Curled up in a rattan chair made of birch, I wrote this. February 22nd, 2012. I'm sitting on the back porch of a glorious cabin in the far northwestern woods of Arizona. The sun is bright as it passes through the tall, skinny evergreens. It pushes past the guards standing at attention, their shadows steadily growing. Today the storm is raging inside me, and yet the sun is breaking through. In between the shadows, the light hits the snow. It shines and it sparkles. The beams bounce off the white sheet lying on the ground and warm my face. I'm still in recovery, and most certainly will always be. But today, there is no glass on the snow, neither from my window nor from my heart. It seems the pieces are being put back together. The sun echoes off the snow, leans in close, and whispers softly, "He is making all things new." And I'm starting to believe that might be true.
Find out more about these stories and more at moodyradio.org.
Well, I don't know about you, but I was certainly blessed by these 3 days of broadcasts, which incidentally are archived at greatnewsradio.org under our archived programs page. You can find out more at incitingincidents.org or moodyradio.org if you want to purchase copies. But right now, the third caller at 217-367-7777 will win a copy. Be the third caller. For our Indiana listeners, dial 1-888-333-9466 during the morning edition, and also when this re-airs in the evening. At this point in the program, call us now. The third caller will win a copy of Inciting Incidents. Tomorrow and Friday, we'll have Bill Allison, who's coming to town on Saturday to help us make Jesus' vision and mission our vision and mission. There's still room for you to attend, so be sure to tune in tomorrow, because I know you'll be blessed and encouraged. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night. And may God transform you as you seek out and find your inciting incident.